welcome. Thank you.
Very good. We're going to continue down the line. We're going to go to number 25, Prairie Dog Program Update. And there's Mike. Mike, we see you.
Hey, great. Good morning, members, Madam Chair, Secretary Roebling, Mike Posellas, the Regional Wildlife Supervisor out of Rapid City. Liz prepped me and told me that you guys are rolling fast today, so I was ready to go. Anyways, I'll be talking a little bit about Prairie Dog information item. You guys should be able to see my screen in a second.
And we can see it now.
All right. Causing me fits today this morning already, but okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about prairie dog management, talk about how game fish and parks assist producers, talk a little bit about prairie dog control guidelines and measures, and then budget implications and some trending issues that we are seeing. So the impetus for the prairie dog management plan comes from the legislature. We are mandated by the legislature to have a prairie dog management plan, as well as a program. And some of these statutes that we have here kind of indicate some of the things that we need to do. So we need to develop a state prairie dog management plan. We need to establish and conduct control programs at state expense on private lands that are encroached upon by prairie dogs from contiguous public lands. And then we need to establish a program to continue prairie dog control on private lands. As a result of the legislature, as I just had mentioned, statute requires that we have a prairie dog management plan. Two primary goals with our management plan. The first goal is to manage for the long-term self-sustaining prairie dog population, and then to, you know, it's a real priority to preclude a federal endangered species listing of the prairie dog. In the late 90s, and early 2000s, there were several petitions to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And basically in 2004, they found out that the prairie dog is not in danger of going extinct. However, the legislature wanted to take action and ensure that we were moving in the right direction. The second primary goal for this is to avoid any negative impacts to landowners that do not wish to accommodate prairie dogs on their property. And that's really going to be the focus of the conversation and presentation I have for you guys today. As I mentioned, by statute, there's a requirement to assist. It's a three-prong evaluation for producers to receive direct assistance from game, fish, and parks with prairie dog issues. So first prong is prairie dogs must be encroaching from adjacent public lands. Second prong is colony must occur within 1 mile of the public land boundary. And then the colony size must be 10 acres or more onto the private land. So I have a couple examples here to the right of the screen. You can see on the right top example, you have the blue portion there. That is school and public lands. That is a qualifying public land. And the crosshatched area is going to be private land. And you can see the green area is prairie dog colony that we had measured. So you can look at that. You can see that it meets the requirements for public land encroaching onto private land. It's more than 10 acres. These folks right here are going to qualify for direct assistance and help from game, fish, and parks. Looking at the example on the lower end there, again, you can see the blue area is the school and public. You can see the crosshatched area is private land, and then the red area is the prairie dog colony that was measured. In this situation, they would not qualify for direct assistance because the prairie dogs did not encroach from the public land in the blue there. But, however, they will receive technical expertise, and of course, we'll share information, contacts for contractors, et cetera, that can assist them where they can get bait, what they would need for a pesticide license, et cetera. So just kind of continuing on here, how does a producer get help? First things first, we're going to online register those folks. It's through our Game Fish and Parks website. They simply go to our Game Fish and Parks website, click on the landowner programs, and then click on register for prey dog control. They're going to enter in their information, and then essentially they're done. They're on the list for the year. Now, if somebody doesn't have a computer, or maybe they would prefer to just call us or something like that, we'll absolutely do that. We're going to make sure we're going to provide that good customer service and ensure that they are going to get on that list and we take a look at their property. Next step, we're going to do a field visit. Game Fish and Parks will go on site, and we're going to measure those acres with our mapping software and kind of confirm, does that landowner qualify for direct assistance, or is this something where we need to direct them to Department of Agriculture, Natural Resources, et cetera, but we're going to ensure that they have that information. Next step, we're going to collaborate with our partners. It's required that all folks that would like to have assistance or get assistance be registered by August 15th so that we have kind of that time frame that we can start preparing for the prairie dog treating period. But we're going to collaborate with our partners. The field staff are going to coordinate with the Forest Service as well as other potential partners. School and Public Land is another big partner that we have prairie dogs on, and we'll be assisting those folks with that. Continuing on with landowner programs here, we're going to then hire our contractors. Game Fish and Parks contracts out control services with four local companies here, and they bid by the acre. We've had a number of these contractors for quite a few years now, and this last year the bid was right around between $19 and $25 per acre. After we have those folks hired on, we give them the information where we mapped everything, and then we're going to look at giving the go-ahead to start treating those acres that we measured out and said qualified. Game Fish and Park contractors will start treating in mid-September, and we'll go into the winter, and that is, of course, weather-dependent. We can treat all the way through February if need be. Like this last winter was open, we were able to get out there and treat quite a number of acres. We had quite a few requests for service this year, and so we were able to really, the weather really helped us out, ensuring that we could treat a lot of those requests for service. One other thing with that, we like to start in September on Forest Service property, where oftentimes we have prairie dogs encroaching onto private lands. We cannot start until October 1st, and then we have to be off by January 31st. So a little bit smaller window there, but we still are usually typically able to get those done, especially the last few years. And, of course, GF&P follow-up. We're going to spot check some of those areas that were treated. We can't spot check them all because we're looking at 10 to 15,000 acres a year. But we'll go out there. We have a math formula that we utilize. We'll do a before and an after observation and then plug in some numbers of what we've seen. Typically, we see about 60 to 75% control, but there's so many different factors that play a role in that, whether it be environmental, et cetera. It can be a real challenge for sure. We'd like to get 90% or more, but that's where we're at right now. And then, of course, the producer receives a reminder letter to sign up again if needed. So just kind of prompt that memory that as this next summer comes along, if you still have prairie dogs out there, get signed up on that online hub and we'll get you rolling. So how treatment is applied. So first off, it requires a Category 12 pesticide license from the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources. We're going to go out there, our contractor's going to go out there, typically out on ATVs or other equipment that they have, and they're going to go out there and put a half a handful of pre-bait, which is essentially just plain old oats, no poison on there, in each prairie dog hole. A few days later, after those prairie dogs have started to consume the regular oats that don't have any poison on them, and they start getting used to that food source, we then put down a tablespoon of zinc phosphide-laced oats right by that hole, and then typically we start seeing kill then. We ask that landowners remove livestock prior to any sort of poisoning or any sort of pre-baiting, and then also we ask that 30 days prior to that they leave the colony alone to kind of ensure that they're doing regular prairie dog stuff and we get the best kill that we possibly can get. So acres treated since 2007 on private and public land. As you can see, in 2007, we were treating a lot of acres. We were over 25,000 acres back then. Through the next few years, you can see that population significantly crash right through here. There's a couple of different or a few different thoughts that likely contributed to that crash. Sylvatic plague would be a primary or a large one. Sylvatic plague is a flea-borne disease that essentially infects the colony, and you're going to have 90% plus death rate in that colony and can wipe out generally a whole colony with relatively short order. Also, too, you were going to be coming off of, in the early 2000s, coming off some dry weather. You start getting more moisture, producing better forage, and those prairie dogs don't have to pioneer out as much looking for more grass and forage to eat. They're going to be able to stay right where they're at. Then, of course, pushed by contractors to really control those prairie dogs. Had quite a number of folks on at that time and really getting out there and getting after it. But as you can see, from 2014 till present day, you're looking at a steady increase of acres that we've treated. You can see in 2019, there's a little bit of a dip, and that's likely environmentally induced. That's when we had quite a bit of moisture. Again, you have that forage increase right there, and those prairie dogs tend to stick where they're at. They don't pioneer out as much, and things are a little bit better for them. Same thing with 2023, we had quite a bit of moisture there, so likely saw a dip of treated acres because of that. But generally speaking, those acres have been increasing over the last decade. Budget implications over the last 5 years. So just shy of $1.2 million has been spent on this program. That includes just about everything. That includes our staff time, that includes equipment, drive time, contractors, technology for mapping those. So that number right there includes everything. This last year, again, another busy season for staff with 130 requests for service. We treated about 14,500 acres, as you can see. FY24 is the fiscal year that we're in right there. And you can see that number is the highest in the last 5 years at $310,000. With an increase in acres, of course, that increase in cost, that's part of it. I should mention as well, Forest Service, National Parks, and School and Public Lands, they actually pay for the acres that are treated on their property. So Game Fish and Park staff and contractors will map those acres. We will coordinate through our online hub system, and we will make sure that those acres get treated, but we have to visit with them and, again, abide by some of the restrictions that they have. On Forest Service property, we are only allowed to do a half a buffer poisoning onto their property. So if you have a private ranch and they have prairie dogs encroaching from the Forest Service, our contractors are only allowed to treat out to a half a mile onto their property. So essentially you don't kill the whole colony or even poison the whole colony. On national parks, it's even a little more restrictive. The landowner actually has to give them a call as well as get onto our online hub system. So a little bit more of a hurdle there working with national parks, but they will poison about roughly, I think it's about an eighth a mile out onto their property. As I mentioned, doing more acres costs more money. Talking a little bit or showing a little bit here about what it costs per acre. And we have experienced over the last 5 years, you can see this trend line going up here. Those costs per acre have been going up, and in FY24 we saw a significant increase. You can see at FY21, $19.37 per acre. FY24, you're looking at $29.49 an acre. A little bit of an anomaly here in FY20. We didn't have very many contractors, and we had to kind of make do with what we had, and likely had some higher bids at that time for folks to go out there and treat. Just as a fun factoid here, cost per acre in 1987 was $7.88. So you can see where we're at quite a number of years later, but you can really see a jump here in the last year or two, just like we've seen a jump in a lot of other things. So with that, I'll entertain any questions, and I just wanted to say a big thank you to Ryan DeFore. Ryan DeFore is our resource biologist that helps with this program and really heads it up. He's out there supervising interns, showing them the ropes, getting out there, making sure that landowners get their request for service and assistance that they need, and really is kind of the backbone and the heart of the program out here. So just wanted to say a big thank you to Ryan. But with that, I will certainly entertain any questions that you guys may have.
Very good. Thanks, Mike. Any questions, Commissioners? Commissioner Reese.
Commissioner Reese here. Mike, have you experienced any resistance? I know with my experience in the past, if you sit there and hit a town a couple of years, 2-3 years in a row at zinc oxide, which you're using on the oats, if they get resistant, they don't eat it. And I've seen this recently in a town that was, there's 435 acres that were treated 2 years in a row, and there's absolutely no, I mean, you can't even tell the poison was put out there. Are we looking at maybe switching up the poison so the prairie dogs aren't, I mean, they get used to it, they won't eat it. Are we switching it up so there's something different out there? I know it's more costly. I mean, I had some done this year myself, and it cost me $50 an acre to have it done. I mean, it's quite, it'll double your cost, but it's more effective, and it's better. There's no prevate. You go out there with Kaput or Rosol, and the poison is down the hole, not on top, like the oats and is put on top of the holes where you don't have to worry about animals, other animals eating it, because it has to go in the hole. Are we considering switching that up a little bit and going to something different?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Yeah, no, great question, Commissioner Beast, and that's a question we get a number of times, and we do consider utilizing other poisons. We have some that are available to us, just as you mentioned. Rosol is a good example of that, and you're right, absolutely needs to go down the hole. There's no prebait. There's a number of other things that are associated with that, but we typically will start with the zinc phosphide, and if we do have situations as you have described there, we'll look at other options that we have. And in that case that you described there, we likely need to look at other options that we have and see if there's something that we could do that's a little bit different here in that situation. So Rosol, Fostox, and those are a couple other different chemicals that we've used with some success. But as I mentioned, there's some drawbacks, there's some challenges that go along with that. And but we absolutely consider those and continue to have those conversations.
Has there been any talks, you know, when you come into a prairie dog town, you map it out, and you only go a mile out from the school and public lands or Forest Service lands, say you got a prairie dog town that's 2 miles long, you can only come in and do 1 mile of it. Well, that really don't do much good for killing that or reducing that town size. So has there been any talk to maybe outside of that 1 mile buffer, if you got a contractor in already, maybe co-oping with the landowner to do the whole town instead of just a portion of it?
Yeah, through the chair?
Yes.
Yeah. Another good question, Commissioner Beast, and that's exactly what we try to do every time, is if they qualify for direct assistance out to 1 mile, if it's a little further out, typically we just treat it anyways. If it is a significant colony, as you described there, generally what we do is we try to visit with that landowner and say, hey, we're absolutely going to be out here. We're going to be helping you out with this colony. But it would be great if you would treat the rest of the colony. And typically we'll work with them. We'll work with our contractors and say, if you're willing to do it, we'll give you their information. We'll work with the contractor and say, hey, we're going to do this whole colony, even extended past that buffer that we talked about. So we do try to do exactly what you just described there. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
Any additional questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you for the update and the report, Mike. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
With that, we are going to take a 10-minute break, and so we'll be at ease for about 10 minutes. All right, welcome back everyone to our April Game, Fish, and Parks Commission meeting. We've had a good day yesterday as well as today. We have one